This is Like Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. How are you feeling right about now? You a little tired, ready to tackle the day, or hungry? Well, how you're feeling right now probably has a lot to do with circadian timing, or your inner clock. All of our cells and body functions fluctuate over the course of the day. But how are our circadian rhythms regulated? And how does our modern life affect how our bodies adjust? Recent studies suggest that disrupting our inner clocks is linked to health issues like obesity, heart disease, depression, and more. But science is also helping us utilize our inner clocks to create new therapies that impact how to best take medications, when to eat, when to sleep, and how we can work best so that we can feel better. Two people involved in this work are Dr. Jennifer Evans and Dr. Deanna Arbel of Marquette University. They join me for this month's Fit for You, and they study the impacts of circadian networks in our body. Dr. Evans starts by explaining what exactly circadian rhythms are.
Basically, it's how our body knows what time it is. So nearly everything in our body fluctuates over the course of the day. So basic like blood pressure, body temperature, cognitive function. So you most likely have experienced this because 2 o'clock in the morning, it's kind of hard to focus. And so those are your daily rhythms. There are optimal times to do things, and then there are suboptimal times to do things.
And where do the, say, commands and the natural rhythm of these things originate from? What's the mothership, so to speak?
Well, it's basically a property of every cell in your body. Every cell in your body is a clock. It knows what time of day it is, and all these cells are kind of orchestrated and regulated by what we call a master clock in the brain. And this master clock knows what's going on in the environment and then tells the rest of the tissues in your body when they should be doing things.
So the master clock has the slightly bigger influence on telling our cells what to do, even if our cells kind of inherently know on a base level what time it is?
Yeah, it's kind of like the master regulator. So it's a really nice analogy is one of an orchestra. So the orchestra has many instruments and components, but they need to be coordinated by a conductor. And so the master clock is like the conductor. He's setting the tempo and running the show. But each of the individual instruments can still play all by themselves.
Okay, that's a great way to look at it. So you mentioned it's all in our cells. Could you take us through the different function of circadian timing on the different levels within our body? So there's molecular, cellular, and then how it influences our behaviors.
So I'm a little bit more of an expert on the tissue and broad behavioral level. And I really like the analogy of the orchestra. Because the other thing that I would mention about that is that each of your different tissues could function as a different player of the orchestra. I'm a viola player myself, and I tend to like the liver and pancreas, so I imagine that the liver and pancreas are the cello and the viola sections, right? And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because these different tissues, they can have different optimal times, and that's actually how it should be for the music to sound the best. You don't want all the different sections playing the exact same tune. Everything has to be optimized, but synchronized to that master circadian clock in the brain. The tissues have an individual function which is optimized for that tissue. So, for example, if we're looking at the pancreas, where its chief function is to release insulin, and insulin is responsible for helping to regulate your glucose levels. There are different times a day when insulin secretion occurs more or less, and there's also different times a day where insulin sensitivity is increased. So, for example, an individual eating the breakfast will show an increased insulin release and slightly increased insulin sensitivity than if they were eating the exact same meal at another time of day. So this would mean very, very broadly that the best time of day for your pancreas would be in the morning. So this is at a very tissue level. At a broader level in terms of overall physiology and behavior, it depends on what output measure you're looking at. So Jen's already mentioned cognition and alertness, which tends to be highest during the day. 10 a.m. tends to be the peak time when people are awake. And importantly, part of this idea of of the circadian rhythmicity that it's happening on a daily basis and in a predictable basis is that that 10 a.m. is not synchronized based on when you woke up. It's synchronized based on the light-dark cycle. So this means that if you're a shift worker and you're waking up at 9 p.m. instead of 9 a.m., your optimal time is not going to be 10 p.m. It's still going to be the 10 a.m. that you missed. So that's another important differentiation here. And all of this comes to bear when you're thinking about the broad behavior and how all these different tissue organs are working together.
If I could just add something. So there's an adage that comes to mind. So the early bird gets the worm, right?
Sure, yeah.
So this system that we're talking about, it allows us to anticipate important events in our environment. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be the early bird and get that worm, your body has to wake up and mobilize itself in order to perform optimally. And so the system allows us to anticipate these important events rather than just react to them. So when the sun rises, you're not playing catch up. Your body is already there, ready to capitalize on the resources that are available. And so the example of insulin is a really good one because we eat at certain times, our body anticipates this, and it starts to produce insulin in advance. Mm-hmm. So that when we do eat, it is already primed and ready to take advantage of the calories that we're consuming.
I do want to touch back on timing and the body when it comes to medicine and the things that our body needs. But before we get there, you mentioned that all these cells are communicating, you know, and is it unique for this master clock to have this level of communication with our cells and our body? Is there any other system in our body that compares on the level of, you know, could we say intelligence that circadian rhythm cells have with one another?
I would say communication among cells is a general property of our body. Every tissue in our body is a collection of cells. And if they were just doing their own thing and not coordinating as a tissue, it wouldn't be effective. So it's a general property. In the circadian system, the master clock is unique because its cells talk among themselves. And so they talk among themselves, coordinate so that they can kind of form this strong population capable of sending coherent, cohesive signals to the rest of the body. Where, like the cells in your pancreas, the individual cells are functional, capable clocks, but they don't necessarily talk to one another in the same way. So they rely on the master clock for these signals to kind of keep them in line.
And would you say the master clock and the circadian cells, that it's a flexible system?
Yes. It's designed to adjust to the environment. So when we travel across time zones, it adjusts. It adjusts with the seasons. So it's a very flexible system. But like any biological system, if you push it too far, it will break.
Right. And with our modern lives, you know, obviously our circadian rhythms are going to be different compared to, say, 1840, when we are rising with the sun, going to bed with the sun, less artificial light. Our jobs itself are different. So what factors of today's modern life would you say have the biggest disruptive impact on circadian timing?
So the biggest disruptor is definitely going to be light. Light at the wrong time of days. And the biggest one that I think a lot of us are guilty of is looking at our phones or screens during the dark. So this is your TV, your computer screens, your phones. And this is partly because not only are they emitting light, but they're emitting this blue wavelength of light, which is responsible for adjusting our circadian clock. And so this is causing a disruption in our circadian rhythms. And as you mentioned, a long time ago, this light at night and this artificial lighting was not not a problem, and it is something fairly new for our bodies to handle. For the most part, you know, the light at night does not break our system. It just causes unnecessary readjustment and retraining. And it's this constant readjustment and potentially desynchronizing our tissues. So we have some tissues that think it's one time of day and some that think that it's another, that's leading to the problem. So I think it's interesting here that it's not that our clock fails to work. It's that it's just... It just didn't expect to be in this environment where it was getting light so much. So it's trying its best to keep us healthy as best as possible.
Yeah, so the light exposure at night is basically like traveling across time zones.
Right.
So when you travel to France or Europe or Japan, you're getting light at a time that your body doesn't expect it. Mm-hmm. And so there's the process of jet lag, which is your body trying to adjust. Now, the thing about travel is that, you know, you stay in the time zone and your body is able to adjust. But when you use tablets or expose yourself to light at night, it's very chaotic. And so your system is trying to adjust, but there are conflicting signals. And so it's kind of like when we're exposing ourselves to light using these tablets, eating at the wrong time, these sorts of things, we're basically imposing jet lag on our bodies. And I'm sure you've experienced this. It's not a happy state to be in.
Right.
You're sleeping at the wrong time. You have like stomach problems, you know, all these things. And so we're introducing that into our daily lives when we engage in practices like that.
I bet people don't think of it as self-imposed jet lag.
It's
you know,
exactly
maybe
that.
We'll change our habits with that picture in mind. And we all perhaps have felt jet lag at some point in our lives from traveling. But what other physical symptoms do we feel like if our, quote, timing is off?
So one of the first things that you might feel if your timing is off is it tends to be gastrointestinal distress. And this could express itself in a variety of ways. But one of the things it could also do is it could change your appetite. So you could find yourself much more hungrier than usual, or you can find yourself just not interested in eating whatsoever. And there's actually some really interesting hypotheses about why your gut is one of the first things to indicate to you that something's not quite right. And I'm thinking, and this is most predominant in the extreme situations such as night shift work, so people that are awake and active during the wrong time of day, or during pretty extreme jet lag, so crossing many, many time zones. And one of the hypotheses for why this occurs is because when you land at your destination and have crossed, let's say, eight time zones, your master circadian clock, the suprachiasmatic nucleus, trains and adjusts to that new cycle very fast. It's very good at its job. But as following with the orchestra analogy again, the ability for that master clock to then disseminate that timing information to these other peripheral clocks and peripheral tissues, those other tissues are a bit slow in the uptake. So while the master clock entrains quickly, these other tissues could take multiple days in order to finally get in line and be playing the tune that they need to be playing at the right time of day. And the gut and the liver are fairly slow to entrain, can take probably 3 days or so. Whereas other clocks in your system can entrain a little bit faster, a little bit slower. The gut is on the slower side. So it could be why this is one of the things that you feel the most, because it's one of the tissues that's most misaligned to that new time of day. Interestingly, there's some data that suggest if you want to re-entrain to your jet lag faster, to even prior to your trip, to start eating at the correct time of day for your new schedule. So if you're going to France, to start eating at the normal French breakfast time, even before you've left. And this is an important and really important studies that have looked at this. And this is partly because not only does light serve as a timing cue for the body, but food is actually a very important one, too.
Right. And with this component of health, you mentioned it's important for eating, for medications, you know, and we look at a prescription that says take twice a day.
Right.
Doesn't specify all optimal times. Mm-hmm. But, you know, do you think this component of circadian timing has been largely left out of health and wellness? You know, when it comes to prescribing medications, when it comes to imposing a new fitness regime or mm-hmm. eating plan?
I think that we're getting better at recognizing the importance of circadian rhythms, but we're not really where we should be yet. We're recognizing the importance of having a circadian light cycle in hospitals to help people recover and to help them get the maximum benefit of their treatment while in the hospital. We're understanding the importance of eating at the right time of day, and we're starting to understand the importance of chronotherapy. So this is making sure that your drugs are delivered an optimal time of day for you. And this is based on the drug target as well as your own circadian rhythm.
No, I completely agree. So we're getting better at it. But I think for many reasons, it's oftentimes difficult to take time into consideration. When you look at the science, there's a lot of data to justify taking time into consideration. But then when you look to put it into practice, there are some obstacles that need some creative solutions. And we're still working on finding the right balance between the biology, the economics, and the social obligations.
You both are studying this in-depthly, but what can someone like myself do in their everyday lives to optimize their body's natural circadian timing?
I think that the quick and hopefully easy one is to minimize your light exposure at night. If you absolutely have to have light at night, they have some blue blocking glasses that you can wear, and this will at least filter out the blue light, which is responsible for readjusting your circadian clock. So that's one possibility.
I think it all depends on what schedule you need to impose. So if you need to wake up early for your job, then you need to wake up early and get some bright light exposure in the morning. Mm-hmm. But if you're a bartender and you need to stay up late, then maybe you need to shift your wake-up times later so that your body actually matches your schedule. And then avoid all cues that are going to conflict with that schedule. So if you need to be a morning person, don't eat late at night. Don't drink caffeine late at night. Do not have bright light exposure. There are practical, like, technological advances that will help us do this. But there's really not one schedule that is best for everybody. And that's one of the things that I think is the most interesting. Some of us are early birds, some of us are night owls, and it really traces back to the biology of the system. It's in our genes.
So if I stay up too late, I can maybe say it's in my genes, but not eat all the snacks at 10:30. Well, Jennifer Evans and Deanna Arbel, thank you both so much for coming in to talk about this today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Dr. Jennifer Evans and Dr. Deanna Arbel study circadian timing at Marquette University. They join me in the studio, and you can find out more and explore past Fit For You segments at wuwm.com.